Hello and welcome to The Good Council, the podcast of the World Future Council. In each episode, we'll highlight current challenges and policy solutions, and we'll also take you on a journey of inspiring stories. Listen in to another of our intergenerational dialogues from around the globe.
Hello, my name is Patricia. Pleasure to meet you today.
The pleasure is all mine, Patricia. I'm looking forward to have an inspiring talk with you.
Okay. And my name is Patricia Kombo. I'm 25 years old. I'm a youth present representative from Kenya, a climate activist and a promoter of sustainable land use practices, and also climate literacy in Kenya, working with young peoples and communities to promote sustainable livelihoods and ecosystem restoration. In this episode of Good Council, our intergenerational dialogue, I'm speaking with Emily Abolesh, who is the CEO of SECEM. SECEM is an initiative in Egypt and is the president of Demeter International. And SECEM promotes sustainable development in ecology, economy, societal, and cultural life. The SECEM already produces, processes, and markets organic and biodynamic foodstuff, textiles, and herbal medicine in Egypt, Arabia, and internationally. Emmy has been deeply involved in SECEM since it was founded. He studied economics and marketing in Cairo and was for a long time campaigning in national and international politics to promote responsible competitiveness, social entrepreneurship, and tackling the greatest challenges of the 21st century, such as climate change and food security. He is also a member of a number of international organizations and councils, such as Fair Trade in United States of America. In June 2018, he was elected as the president of Demeter International. Emmy became the member of World Future Council in 2017 and chairs our Commission of Ecosystems and Livelihood, which his father has already chaired. Hi, Emmy. It's such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you for taking time to have this intergenerational talk. How are you and how has the pandemic been to you?
Thank you very much, Patricia, for this introduction. And I'm very well today. Looking forward to an inspiring talk. And I think that the pandemic was a really big test for us as for the whole world.
Yes.
And we were able to show and prove that a sustainable community, a learning living organization, is much more resilient and healthy than many other organizations and communities. And hence, I'm very grateful to Allah that we have passed this pandemic in a good way.
Okay, that's good. Also, here in Kenya, some measures have been relaxed, showing that you're united to ending the pandemic. Now, Mr. Hemi, your father, Abraham, founded SECEM in 1977, and you became a CEO already at the age of 23. Today, I'm 25. That's 2 years young. Since then, the initiative has grown immensely and is now recognized as an example for practiced sustainable development. I would like to understand, what does SECEM mean and what does it mean to you personally, bearing in mind you took the leadership at 23 years old?
Now, for me, obviously, SECEM is my life, my vision, my dream, my mission since many, 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 many years. And it is an old pharaonic word, which means vitality from the sun, and is the name my father gave to this initiative in 1977, when he came back from Austria with us, the family, to create a sustainable community in the desert where people live, work, and learn together, produce ethically and environmentally sound products, live together in forms which which are carried by respect and integrity, and where everyone in the community can unfold his or her full potential. So what sounds like a dream, this Sekem vision my father had, today is on the ground a miracle in the desert. And I'm happy to share with you many more of the details and the results if we have time and if you wish.
Okay, thank you very much. And you've said that Sekem has achieved a lot of goals and currently is recognized internationally. What is the milestone you would like to reach in future?
In regard to what we have achieved, I would say we have proven that organic and biodynamic farming works in the desert, works in Egypt, works in North Africa. We have proven that organic and biodynamic farming is not only working, but it's more efficient, it's healthier, it's better for the environment, and ultimately cheaper than conventional farming. And we have also proven that organic and biodynamic farming can contribute in a bold and big way to mitigate climate change, to sequester millions and millions of tons of carbon and help to achieve our carbon targets for the world. So on the agricultural dimension, I think we have really contributed to a paradigm shift. In the economic sphere, we have introduced what my father called economy of love. And I think this concept, which is so opposite to the mainstream capitalistic models, is and it's working. And in Egypt, Sekem nowadays is the market leader in herbal teas and sells 80% of its Demeter and organic products in Egypt, not in export markets, competing with multinationals. So we have proven that economy of love works in a very efficient way. And in the cultural dimension, through our schools and the University of Heliopolis University for Sustainable Development, our university, we have proven that you can unfold the potential of the next generation, of the young ladies and men of Egypt, in a way that they can, first of all, learn to know themselves, and second, get activists to do something to improve the world. So I believe that on all these dimensions, we have achieved real impact on society and on enlarge, not only on our own 5,000 community members. And this is what really counts for us. So when you ask me, what do we want to achieve in the future? Until 2057, which is the next 40 years since my father died in 2017, we want to take all of these ideas I just spoke about and many more. We want to upscale them and really make sure that everyone in the society, every one of the 107 million Egyptians, whether he's a farmer, a teacher, a businessman, a politician, can really understand and use them so that all these ideas get mainstream ideas and every farmer of Egypt is using organic farming. Every teacher in Egypt is unfolding potential. And every businessman in Egypt is using economy of love. This is our mission for the next years until 2057. And we are working on it at Heliopolis University, at Sekem, at the Egyptian Biodynamic Association, and are very optimistic that we can achieve this next big contribution and miracle in Egypt.
Wow, what an incredible answer. And I'm so happy and honored to learn that you already have a vision by 2057 to give to the communities and to upscale the economy of love. And My question is, bearing in mind you learned from your father and you worked with your father when he founded this, the SECEM, what is that important lesson you picked from your father and you just wanted to run with the idea?
My father was not only my physical father, but he was also my teacher and my brother. And so I learned from him many, many different things on many, many different levels. But if you ask me, what are the one or two things which are those whom I still use every day? One is to always tackle challenges in a holistic way along all four dimensions of sustainable development. And just to give you a picture of what I mean, when my father started in the desert in 1977, the first two things he bought in the desert, when there was nothing, just sand, was a tractor to work on the soil and a piano to work on the soul of the people who worked there. A piano in the desert. I hope you can imagine the picture. And this is the holistic approach which he wanted to visualize for all the people there at, from the beginning. And from the other side, I think, is this persistence, this belief in the vision and belief that God and our Creator is sending challenges and problems to those whom he loves most. And my father always said that Allah is loving Sekhem most in Egypt. This is why we have so many problems. And from these problems, we can learn and develop ourselves.
Oh, thank you. And by sharing the story of your father and piano in the desert, taken back to when I was growing up. And the reason why I'm into environmental and climate space is courtesy of my father. But my story was a bit different. My father is a military person. So every time when I was young, he kept on telling me the trees we plant, they protect him when he's on mission, because he used to tell us he sleeps on trees. And the Kenyan military uniform resembles color green. So I grew knowing that every time I'm growing a tree, I'm actually protecting my dad and his fellow first mate. So I'm trying to connect, reconnect. And through this, I'm learning that education must be passed from one generation to another, either passively or actively, for the next generation actually to learn on how to protect the environment. Because we are rich not for our parents, maybe today we could be in different dimensions. Desertification is becoming a global threat, if you know, especially in Africa and other countries. How do you approach the topic of desertification, especially considering that you come from a community or rather a country that is desert, and we do not want our nations, which are not desert, to turn into desert? How do you approach desertification in SECEM?
I mean, we are the example of a community which turns desert into fertile soils and living land. And so we have proven that organic and biodynamic farming is capable of enliving that sand. So our approach is to create living soils by adding organic matter, adding carbon, adding microorganisms to the sand, and having a good crop rotation, having good plants, healthy plants, using the predators and using the insects in the area, protecting these plants through our bushes and trees around the farms. And then within this biodynamic farming organism, where cows and sheep are also important members of the community, we create a closed, circular agricultural system where we can fertilize our soils from our own animal manure. We produce compost, the black gold, for the farmers in Egypt and in the desert. And then we produce healthy, good plants, which we use for vegetables and medicinal herbs and cereals and any other uses in Egypt. And by being able to reclaim thousands of acres of desert and turn them into fertile soils, we have proven that it's possible to revert the process of desertification and reclaim desert to fertile soils. And I think this is something which everyone can do when he learns the system, and which can contribute to better livelihoods, better food security, and better futures for the next generations to come.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And going through your bio, I've learned something that you were born in Graz and you moved to Cairo. And these are two different, like two extreme ends. How did the two ways of life complement each other in your work and promoting the economy of love?
I mean, I always enjoyed being a citizen of two different countries and cultural areas.
Yes.
Because I always felt I could learn from both of them. I could build bridges between them. And I never felt real strong controversy or clash of cultures or opposition between them. In the opposite, I think there was always a huge synergy. And for me, I think it's something to celebrate: diversity, different cultures, using the power of these different cultures for your own potential unfolding and for your contribution to society is something I enjoy very much. So I'm very grateful to my fate, which connected in me these two different continents.
Okay, that's amazing. And I'm trying to imagine that I've been born and raised in Kenya and I would like to explore a different country, a different culture. What can you advise someone like me? Should it be something I should consider? And if I consider, what are the do's and don'ts to ensure we promote sustainable even in other countries and in other cultures?
I mean, in Sekem in general, not only in my personal life, we try to celebrate diversity. In Sekem, when you go there today, you will find people from different countries in the world, different continents, from Asia, from South America, from Europe, different languages, different age groups, students and adults, and so on and so on. We believe in the power of and the richness of diversity of different cultures, genders, colors, and so on. And we think that the outcomes of such a multicultural community will always be different and richer than those of very monoculture-like cultures. And so I can only recommend to you, try to build networks around you and with you in Kenya or outside Kenya, wherever you can, which are diverse, get you other perspectives, other cultures, other religions, point of views. So then you can learn, develop yourself, and unfold your own potential.
Okay, wow, that's amazing. And now, since you speak in three languages, which language do you think in?
it's an interesting question. In general terms, I would say the language I was born in, which is German. But in reality, in my day-to-day life, when I meet people, it's the language I speak with them, because this is the much quicker way. So when I sit now with my Egyptian colleagues, I will most probably think in Arabic and speak to them in Arabic. And when I speak to you now, I do not translate from German to English. I think in English. And when I speak to my family and most of my friends, then it will most probably be German. And when I am alone without anyone around me, I think my preferred language would be German.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And now going to politics, we've seen, especially in Africa, people are complaining and are saying that politicians are sleeping, politicians are not working, politicians need to have climate action restoration as part of their campaign materials. But you are of a different opinion because you once said you don't believe politicians alone can make change, but rather civil society and socially oriented entrepreneurs. Was there a key moment that brought you to this realization, or is it a process that you underwent to come up with such a conclusion?
Yeah, it's obviously something which is an accumulated experience of my 60 years of life now. But in particular, it was obvious when I was on the Egyptian delegation for the COPs.
Oh, wow.
The last 15 years or 16 years. And at a certain stage, I just realized that politicians are not free to do what they want to do, even if they have good visions, objectives, or targets. They are just very much in the hand of the system and cannot do freely what they want to do. They are very busy. They are very unfree of using their time for what they think is important. And so I believe even if they have the good intentions, they are very much slaves of a system. And so I would say that they alone will not turn around the future. They will need our strong involvement. And in this case, our is civil society and social entrepreneurs. I believe that we have a role to play and that politicians, whenever they will feel that there is a critical mass or even a majority on a certain path, they will follow us. This is why I am really pushing very hard my fellow colleagues here in Egypt to vocally explain what they want. And I try as a social enterprise in Shechem to prototype models for a possible different future.
Yeah.
Because there I can do it and influence it immediately. As a politician, yeah, you need years and years and long discussions and slow outcomes.
Yeah, it's true what you're saying, and I so much relate to it. And especially in Kenya, I'll give you a scenario. When there was the push to ban plastics, which was enacted in 2017, and it was a lot of work was done by civil society and non-governmental organization together with academia. And through that, we pushed and pushed and pushed. And through the collaboration and the hard work, we saw it come to pass. And when it was almost coming to pass, we actually saw politicians trying to align with the side because it had majority. And so this is a lesson that even other civil societies and non-governmental organizations should know. It's time to collaborate with politicians rather than giving them the chance to go. And I also happened to go, I went to COP26 in UK, and going through the negotiations, which were done by politicians, you could understand there was a disconnect. And that's why you say it needs a strong collaboration. And you are working closely together with big organic companies such as Alnatura and Lebesbani. I hope I pronounced well. What do you think their role is in transformation towards sustainable markets and development?
Now, Alnatura and Lebensbaum, two German companies we are working with, started like us very small 40 years ago and have grown like us over the last 40 years to big organic companies in Germany and in Europe. And as organic companies, they have offered organic products to the consumers in Germany. And with their offering, the consumers could choose between conventional and organic products. And more consumers every day are choosing for organic products, for healthy products, for products which do not impact on our climate negatively and so on. So I think they did a huge catalytic role in the development of the organic movement as companies providing organic products to the consumers. They have contributed to the development which we want to see more and more happening and upscaling and mainstreaming in Europe and in the whole world.
Okay, thank you very much. Earlier you said you developed the concept of economy of love. What does this mean? What is economy of love?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different dimensions to the economy of love. The one dimension is that it is trying to support the responsible consumer with transparent information on the impact of the products he's buying on the environment, on the culture, on the society, and on the economic dimension of life. And we believe that consumers are the reason for the world we are seeing around us. Consumers pull the kind of products and services we are complaining about with their demand. And if they would know that the demands they have, the products they ask for, the services they ask for, are destroying the world, are destroying the ecosystem, are supporting unfair payments to poor people in Asia or anywhere else in the world, they would not want this to happen. We believe that most of the consumers we know here in Egypt, like in Kenya and in Europe, would love to support products which are economically sound, but also supporting ecological developments and fair social regulations. So this is why the whole economy of love is a concept to support consumers with all the information needed to make a well-educated decision on their consumption behavior. And we believe by doing this, more and more consumers will move to more transparent information on the products they buy and will buy the right products.
Thank you very much. And this is the kind of economy which is needed to solve all problems and to promote sustainable development goals in all countries. And I feel you've really captured it, especially where it comes to integrity and also being transparent. And there's a huge problem when it comes to people disclosing the content of their products, especially plastics. You find a lot of plastics, they do not disclose the chemicals used, the toxins used, if they are recyclable, if they are single use, and consumers will continue purchasing because they lack the information. This is so much incredible, and I will promote it in our country that people to have responsible consumership and also people to be, organization to be transparent to consumers for them to make informed decisions. And finally, I'm a youth president at World Future Council, where you sit as a counselor. What does it mean being a counselor member at World Future Council?
Oh, I love the World Future Council because it takes a look from the future into the future. It really measures what we do today on its impact on the future, on its impact for future generations, as a voice for future generations. And I'm very happy to contribute as much as I can, to learn as much as I can. And as a counselor, obviously, I have the honor to meet the other counselors from all over the world on a regular basis. And I am always inspired and enthusiastic when I meet them and see what wonderful things and miracles are happening all over the world when people have this long-term view into the future and really try to support a healthy and sustainable development into the future.
In 2019, you hosted World Future Council in Sekem. Why did you invite them?
Oh, I just wanted to get this enthusiasm, this inspiration into our community and to give a chance to my colleagues and my community members at SECAM to experience firsthand all these different counselors and their stories and their wonderful visions and initiatives.
Okay, we've seen a rise of number of young activists and climate I've been being one of them. How did you feel at the time you became CEO, and what challenges did you encounter? And I'll give one of the scenario where which I'm experiencing and my fellow young activists are experiencing: lack of meaningful engagement, and there's a lot of greenwashing. What advice can you give a young person like me today to ensure that I do not give up no matter what, but I scale up my sustainable development projects?
Oh, I just urge you to try to work towards your vision. Continue to work towards your vision and develop the patience and persistence to overcome the challenges on the way, because there will be challenges all the time. There will be problems all the time. But from the one side, you will learn from them and develop yourself. And from the other side, I can assure you that you can overcome all of them with a lot of enthusiasm and love to the world and love to other people. And in the end, I can also tell you from my own experience, you will feel happy doing so every day,
yeah,
from morning until the evening. And this is a very important general feeling, which I wish to everyone in the world.
Oh, thank you very much. And a lot of our ideas as young people are not heard, and people are not willing to meaningfully engage with young people. What do you think people in your position and different countries can do to ensure there's a clear linkage between them and young people?
I mean, what we try to do at SACAM already is, from the one side, to have an open community, to invite young people from all walks of life, all countries in the world, to come, see, experience, to give them a chance to engage and work and learn. And at the same time, we learn and live with them and get inspired from them. So what we are doing is trying to support our next generation, those who will take the flag and the responsibility, whether they are from outside Egypt or they are from inside Egypt, which is as important. So we also invite young activists from all parts of Egypt to SACAM, to Heliopolis University, on a regular basis, to make sure that we are in a continuous exchange and that we really also have the kind of support to make their dreams come true. So we have a microcredit scheme and an entrepreneurship center and many, many, many different tools to support young people to implement their ideas.
Okay, and people describe you as always a happy man, true to their words, because from the conversation we are having, I see you're so happy, you're so motivated. What keeps you motivated in life?
I'm just so happy every day to be able to serve here in this community, to see the light in the eyes of my fellow colleagues in the community shining, and to make a real impact in the development of the community and myself. And there's nothing more beautiful and more happy, or nothing making me more happy than this every day from the morning until the evening.
Yeah. Okay, sir. Mr. Helmi, what was your biggest success in life? What can you say? This is something I'm always proud of.
I mean, there are many different things on many different levels, but the one thing which makes the biggest impact on Egypt was our success in the 1990s, 1991, to ban aeroplane spraying of pesticide in Egypt, which reduced the pesticide usage of Egypt by more than 90% in these years.
Wow.
And I think this was a real savior for many, many lives and for the whole ecosystem of Egypt. And obviously, this is not over and it needs continuous efforts, but it was a big achievement.
Okay. And did you ever have a moment of doubt, and how did you get past it?
I have to be honest, I'm not really a very doubting person. I'm very optimistic, always. But I think that one of the reasons is that I have very, very good colleagues in the Future Council of SECEM around me who support me, who help me, and who also teach me things. And on the other side, I have these exercises which we have here at SECEM, where we every day in the morning at 6:30 meet every day to have some spiritual work, which is giving us a lot of inspiration and really connects us to our sources of inspiration. And I think this is very, very important to have such a source of inspiration, wherever this lies and however you call it. But this is something which lights you from inside, which is very important. And I can only recommend to everyone to search for his source.
Yes. Are you hopeful for the future?
Very much so. I'm very, very optimistic. And I believe that change will come anyhow. It will either come from our wise actions and deeds or from crisis if we are not wise and not acting. And I'm really trying my best to make the change and the system change coming from our activities and actions. But I know that if for any reason we are too slow or we are not acting bold enough, the change will come anyhow, and then it will come from crisis. But there is no other way than change in the air.
Thank you very much, sir, for your time. And I know I'll be unfair if I fail to ask you if you really have something you'd like to know about myself as a young representative of World Future Council at Youth Present, and also as a champion for sustainable development.
Oh, yes, I would love to know what is your dream for the next 20 years in Kenya, or even more, 30 or 40, whatever your vision is for Kenya. How do you look into the future of Kenya, and what do you see coming from the future?
Oh, thank you very much. In Kenya, I can say in 20 years from now, we will have revolutionized our education system and moving from the theory based to a more education for sustainable development, because currently young people have really taken the space. We've seen them in spaces demanding for what is rightfully, and also creating synergies for engagement. And as I'm doing, because I run a community-based organization, we are working on establishing a curriculum to train young people on matters environment, climate, and sustainable. Because with the current curriculum that we have, I feel there's a gap. And as much as we want to achieve the sustainable development in 20 years to come, it will be meaningful to just let what our forefathers have fought for to a generation that is not aware of what is sustainable, why should I do this and not this, and what it means by climate. And I always say, and this is always my everyday quote, a child without environmental education is like a bird without feathers. They cannot move. They will crawl, but they will not fly to feed themselves. And that's why we are working to make sure 20 years from now, education will be, education for sustainable development and climate literacy will be leading. Because another thing that we are working mightily with young generation, because we've had a lot of COP policies and policies. Maybe it's time we change the narrative from going the policy way to going to the education and mindset change for the communities by making them, you know, come up with the policies themselves. So that's what I envision and Kenya envisions for 30 years from now.
This is a wonderful picture. I wish you all the best and good luck. And I can see it happening with you and your colleagues working on it.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you very much for the time. And also, I've learned a lot, especially the economy of love. This is something I did not have an idea that it can really practically work. And actually, and also what you're doing in the desert. And if I was an artist and if I was to give your project a name, I would call Sekhem a desert queen, a queen in the desert, whereby everyone is admiring a queen who is giving hope to the desert, because it's indeed amazing work in the desert. And for people to imagine, even people in the desert, they can feed themselves. So you are a desert queen. The second is a desert queen out of nowhere, giving hope to millions of livelihoods. Thank you very much for the work that you're doing, and also for the time that you've created to have this talk. And I know it will inspire young people that even at 23, they can lead, they can have initiatives that will change the livelihoods of their communities, and also to upscale the sustainable development. And once again, thank you very much for your time. And it's my wish to visit Sekhem. I'll be coming to Egypt for COP27, and I would like to learn more and meet you and, you know, advance this. And I'm so sure you'll be my mentor from today. Thank you.
You are most welcome. I will be at COP27 too.
Because wow.
I'm a national champion for climate, and I have a concept on agriculture carbon credits, which I'm going to present. I will send it to you, but when you come to Egypt, you are most welcome to visit us and to see Sekhem and to meet the community.
Wow, thank you very much. Looking forward to COP27.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed this inspiring conversation and will tune in again for more next time. This podcast is brought to you by the World Future Council, a foundation that identifies, develops, highlights and disseminates future-just solutions for the current challenges that humanity is facing. To support our work, find us at www.worldfuturecouncil.org, as well as on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and, of course, in our next episode.